Vishnu Sahasranama. Name 355, Mahaksha. Great eyes, that's the obvious understanding. Very large eyes. Sometimes the devotees would note Srila Prabhupada would have very large eyes. His eyes would open wide. Sometimes the eyes open wide in wonder. What's going on? So how can Krishna be in a state of wonder? Krishna knows everything. Just like an experienced person doesn't become surprised at anything. Well, there's always something to surprise someone in this material world. Just one example could be out of many. There was a photo in a magazine produced by devotees in Australia many years ago, showing devotees festival for the public, and in the photo there was a woman who had obviously never seen a puri being cooked in her life before, seeing the puri puff up in the hot ghee, we hope it was, looking astonished. Especially in New York City, the local inhabitants take pride at not being astonished by anything, because they've seen it all already. So if someone was to walk down the street naked except for a python wrapped around his body with his hair on fire, they'd just walk past without even giving him a second glance. Because you can't show that there's anything which surprises you. You've already seen everything. So Krishna's seen everything. But still, he wonders. There's that verse at the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita from Lalita Madhav, where Krishna says, what is the beauty of Radha that so much attracts me? What is her sweetness? What is her glory? He's amazed. How can I'm Atmarama, fully satisfied in myself, how can I be amazed by Radha? I can't understand it. Well, that's not good, being God and not being able to understand something. So, therefore, he took the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he still didn't understand. Because who can understand Krishna? Who can understand Radha? If we could understand Krishna, that would be something amazing. But Krishna himself can't understand Radha. So this is the amazing form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who most amazing because it's Krishna himself coming to understanding himself and failing to do so. And trying to understand what is it in himself that makes Radha so attracted to him. He's so attracted to her, she's so attracted to him, and it's just beyond his comprehension. So that's why we find that greater than Krishna is prema. So big eyes in astonishment. That's one understanding. Big eyes, we can also think Jagannath, Jai Jagannath. Very big eyes. Big eyes, he's watching everything. He can see everything. He sees not only outside, he sees within our heart everything that's going on. Oh, are we happy that he can see that? We should make our heart so nice that he'll look inside and think, oh, yeah, I'd like to be there. It's very powerful eyes, X-ray eyes. He can see into everything. He sees both the wood and the trees. He sees on the micro level and on the macro level. He sees the whole universe and he sees everything within it. Also, The eyes that is often used in the Upanishadic literature to mean all the senses. Sometimes one is used for them all. So, especially the eyes. So he has all his senses are very powerful. Not only that, but they're interchangeable. So in that sense, they're different kind of senses to those that we can even imagine. The eye stands for any gyanendriya, any organ of any sensory organ by which we attain knowledge of our surroundings. What else different commentators have said? Yeah, he sees everything at all times. He sees simultaneously past, present, and future. His eyes, one feature of the greatness of his eyes is not only in size and ability to see, because it's not necessarily that you have a big eye, you have a better ability to see, because there are some birds whose eyes are small compared to humans, but they can, from a great height, they can look down and see a little mouse and then swoop down. Probably there are plenty of such. In English, they're called kestrels, one kind of hawk. They'll flutter like this, then all of a sudden, zoom, like dive bombing. They can see a great deal. The vulture also, from a great distance, can see very clearly. So Krishna has very powerful sensory perception. There's also seeing, we see within a certain spectrum of light. So Krishna can see within all spectrums. And another feature of the greatness of his eyes is, of course, the very great beauty of his eyes. That's another feature of Krishna's great eyes. So in this way, by going through this Vishnu Sahasranam, we can meditate on the different qualities of Krishna that makes him the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another meaning of aksha, it's a common word for eye. It's not the only word in Sanskrit for eye, but it's a very common one. What other words are there? Nayan, Netra, Chakshu, some other words. There must be more also. Lochan, yeah. So it also means an axle, as of a vehicle, of a chariot. So the Sri Vaishnav commentator on this takes this as the meaning that takes it as a figure of speech, whereas the part is used to refer to the whole. So he takes this to mean one who has a great chariot. And in this way, he links it with the next name. This Parashara Bhatta, the Sri Vaishnav commentator, he likes to link each name, the one before it with the one after it. So the next name is Garuda Dhaja, which means on his chariot he has the flag of Garuda. So in this way he links the two names, that he who has a great chariot. Nothing is hidden from Krishna. The next name then is 356, Garuda Dhaja, which means he who has Garuda on his flag, that means on his chariot. Chariot means especially that is the war chariot. The chariot is used for going here and there also. He travels from Dwaraka to Hastinapur, he goes by chariot. He could go just by Garuda, just fly. on Garuda. You can also fly on Garuda. In Indonesian Airways, yeah. I flew from Moscow to Zagreb on Aeroflot, you can say. Aeroflot and then Croatia Airways, two-legged course. So somebody else go, how did you come? Oh, I flew on Garuda. Means I went from Jakarta to Singapore, something like this. But it's a Muslim country, theoretically. Krishna flies on Garuda, then why does he go on chariot? It's a several-day journey. Well, as he goes along, there may be many reasons for that. One reason is that he's playing his Naralila. Krishna jate kela sarvotam Naralila. Narabapu taha sharup. Of all Krishna's pastimes, the human-like one is the best. And that is his very original form. So he appears as if an ordinary human. What is that verse? Atimatyani Bhagavan. How does that begin? Anyone? Saharamena Keshava. How does that verse begin? Kritavan kila karmani saharamena keshava atimartyani bhagavan guha kapatamanisha. Krishna and Balaram, they performed many activities as if they were humans, even though they are superhuman. They remained covered, unseen. And appeared to ordinary people to be as ordinary people. So that's one reason. It makes things sweeter. If Krishna comes flying in on Garuda, then it's God. If he comes in on a chariot, long journey, come in, wash your feet, give him some, fan him. It's a long, tiresome journey. You took so much trouble to come and see us, the Pandavas at Hastinapur. He took so much trouble to come. And also on the way, he gives darshan to so many people. Those lands are still very pious, the lands in between Dwarka and Hastinapur, because again and again Krishna would go up and down. Even though he was living in Dwarka and was very happy living among the residents of Dwarka, he was attracted by the devotion of the Pandavas. And again he would go to visit them, which is quite a long journey. We would think it a long journey. Even now, even if you wanted to fly, you'd have to, from Dwarka, what's presently Dwarka, you have to take train or something, overland to Jamnaga, and then Jamnaga to Bombay, and then Bombay to Delhi. But a direct train would take more than 24 hours, so that we think a long journey. But going by chariot, of course, Krishna can go very quickly also, but when he's going with all his retinue, then he'd go at more or less normal speed, and then he'd stop at different places at night along the way. And maybe they'd stop sometime in the middle of the day if it's very hot, and they'd take rest, and then there'd be an advance party, just like on the Padyatra. That's a big Padyatra with it depends who Krishna comes with, how many people he comes with. If he comes with his queens, then it's really a big show. So then they go in advance, make arrangements, and then setting up the tents, and just the assistants for setting up the tents, and then getting water for so many people and food for so many people, and then there'd be guards at night, there'd be a whole big array of people. So in that whole big group, where's Krishna? How are you going to find him? There you see, his flag is flying on his chariot. There's Krishna. His chariot is there with Garuda. And in the battle also, on the battlefield, who's fighting who, you don't know. In a big army, you may not know who's who, and you might start fighting with your own group, friendly fire, people from your own group. So the flag of the chariot distinguishes who is who. The number of chariot fighters would be much less in comparison to the number of cavalry and infantry. So people would know just by seeing the insignia who is there. Even when Krishna, Arjuna, he said he wanted to see who am I arrayed up against in the army and the opposite side. So he might have seen in the front line who's there. But a little bit behind, you wouldn't see, because he doesn't have mahaksha, the eyes to see through other people. But by their insignia, you could see. So Krishna has the insignia of Garuda. Of course, in the Kurukshetra battle, he was on Arjuna's chariot, and Hanuman was there, not Garuda. So just like Hanuman was personally there, it wasn't just there was a picture. Actually, if we make a picture of Hanuman, then if that is made with great devotion, then Hanuman will be pleased to be present also. I don't know about these cartoons they have of Hanuman. I don't find that very respectful. But he will be he was personally present there, and roaring, and just by his roaring, the enemy soldiers would become those who were not great heroes. They were just heroes. They were different levels. So they would become discouraged and afraid. So Garuda was personally there wherever Krishna went. In battle also, Krishna would sometimes fight on chariots. Sometimes he fought directly on the back of Garuda. Mostly in Krishna Leela, he fights on a chariot, but at least when he went to Pragjyotishpur and fought with Banasura and others, then he was mounted on the back of Garuda directly. So Garuda is there with Krishna, either under him or over him. It's a great privilege to be carrying Krishna, but even to be above him, what kind of privilege is that? Which devotee would even want that? That he would be above him. Usually on the dhvaja, on the chariot's flag, there would be some symbol of some respected god that we take help from. But Krishna has Garuda there. We can only imagine what a dear devotee Garuda is to Krishna, that he's always... When Krishna wants to go somewhere, he can go anywhere himself. He is everywhere himself. He can just appear wherever he wants to, but out of kindness to... Because he loves Garuda as Garuda loves him, so where he goes on Garuda. And also has Garuda above him, so that people can see on the battlefield. Then when in the great battle, just like a Kurukshetra, then the soldiers of the Pandavas might be fighting, and if they see, oh, here is the flag of Hanuman is coming. So they know now Arjuna and Krishna have come. So the soldiers on the Pandava side, they get great encouragement from that. They say, oh, now Krishna is here. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partha, Danudharaha, Tatra Shriya Vijayo Bhutya Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama. Now that Krishna and Arjuna are here, there must be morality, opulence, victory, beauty, all good things will come. Now they feel inspired. Krishna is here. He will protect us. And the enemy soldiers, they feel, oh, now we're finished. Time to run away. That also identifies where the king, his flag is flying. The king is there, so the Yudhishthira in the battle. So especially you have to protect the king. Because once this king's killed, even if there's a great force is still left, even if his army is still more powerful than the other army, but then the battle's finished because it's all over. They don't. If the commander-in-chief is finished, then you can appoint another one, as we saw on the Kaurava side, that one after another they had to appoint. First of all, there's Bhishma, then Drona, then Karna, then Shalya, and then there's nothing left. So, again and again, they had to appoint. So, but when the king is finished, then the battle's finished. So he had to be defended very carefully, and then the others would have the opportunity. Here's the one to attack. So, usually the king would stay somewhat in the background, although Yudhishthira and Duryodhana on the other side. The head, he was the king on the other side. They also fought. There's a one Sri Vaishnav. He has given a quote from Mahabharata, although we don't know which version of Mahabharata. It's not a well-known story. The Garuda requested Sriman Narayana for permission to stand on top of him when Garuda had to fetch Amrita for securing the release of his mother. So Narayana agreed and put him on his banner to grant this request so that he could go above him. And at this time he also asked Garuda to be his vehicle. No, that's not the Sri Radha Krishna Shastri. That's another commentator. Shankaracharya, in his commentary, gives another could also be considered that he himself is the ornament of Garuda. Garuda's a mighty personality, but when we see him with Narayan on his back, then he looks so much more beautiful. That's his constitutional position. There's a a painting in the eighth canto of Bhagavatam, one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples of the fight between the devas and the asuras, demigods and the demons, and in which Vishnu appeared on the back of Garuda. So as I remember seeing that the first time, and every time I look at it, it's just a stunning painting, that how the devotee was inspired from Krishna within his heart to present Krishna on the back of Garuda when the demigods were being routed by the demons, and then Vishnu personally came on the back of Garuda and turned the tide of the battle. So how he's poised very elegantly on the back of Garuda and with his Sudarshan Chakra killing, especially Kalanemi, the great demon. So if you like, you can see that photo. Is it a photo? Well, it's a photo of a painting, but it's a window to the spiritual world, how this devotee has become inspired by Krishna to present Krishna on the back of Garuda. The next name is Atula, which means incomparable. That is similar to names like Shrestha, which also appear in Sri Vishnu Sahasranama. It's not exactly the same. Shrestha means the best. But the same kind of commentary will be made, because incomparable. Why is he incomparable? Because he's the best in everything. In every field, he's unequal, unmatched, matchless. He's not only unmatched, he's matchless. The two words are not exactly the same. If we say unmatched, it means, well, maybe in future someone will do it. They'll finally, by doing their meditation and their austerity, I finally realized I was God. So, it's such matchless stupidity. Well, it is matched by others also. You'd think it would be a rare phenomenon, but actually it's not so rare that people think that I can become God. But he is ananya. Anya means other. Ananya means there's no other like him. Matav parataran ananyat kinchid asti dhananjaya. No one and nothing is equal to me. No one is greater than Krishna. So he's unique in all respects. He's the best in everything. He's everything about him, all his qualities. Anoraniyan mahato mahiyan. He's the smallest, he's the biggest, he's the kindest, he's the nastiest. If you want to get into a scrap with Krishna, he can be more nasty than you. Hiranyakashipu is the nastiest person possible, but Krishna was more nasty than him, to him, not to anyone else. So in all ways, Krishna is incomparable. Tula, there's one word, tula, which means a balance. You may have seen in some temples in India, they have a balance, a big one. So someone will sit on it, and they have to put their own weight of whatever they make an offering to the deity. They put their own weight of something that's specified in advance on the other side. It may be sugar or rice, and if it was a great king of the old days, it might be gold. Nowadays it's more likely to be, well, rice isn't much. Sugar maybe. If it's ghee, it'll be very expensive, especially if it's real ghee. So that means a balance, but there's nothing if we put Krishna on one side. There's nothing to balance him, except there's one story that Krishna was sat on the balance and he said, okay, now you put something on the other side to balance it. And he couldn't put anything. Krishna was still more heavy. And then I believe it was Rukmini had the good idea to put one tulsi leaf. And then that was equal or more than Krishna. And that's also possible only by Krishna's incomparable mercy on his devotees and his incomparable ability to defy the laws of physics. Because tulsi leaf shouldn't be equal in weight to a human being. So in every respect, if we think of anything, any quality, Krishna has it incomparably. So we shouldn't get puffed up. Yeah, we could always remember that whatever abilities we may have, that's all just a little tiny spark of the greatness that is inherent in Krishna. So that's why one thing, he has 1,000 names, but even 1,000 names are not enough to describe all his qualities. Then the next name is Sharabha. Sharabha. You may, those who are careful readers of Srimad Bhagavatam, they may remember coming across this word. Just like, for instance, it appears there in the list of created beings in the 3rd canto that were produced from Kashyap. So one of them is the Sharabha, it's a kind of animal also. It's described in the 8th canto in the forest at the base of the Trikut mountain, in which the lake was there that Gajendra got caught by the crocodile. So while giving a brief description of the flora and fauna of that forest, one of the animals mentioned was the Sharabha. So that's described in Shastra as an 8-legged animal. And it's described in many places. And in one place I saw the description that actually has 4 legs, but it has 4 protrusions also, which also look like legs. And the special feature of this animal is its extreme fierceness. To see it is to not see anything ever again, because you get killed by it. If you come into contact with the Sharabha, you're dead, that's all. It's mentioned in many Shastras, so presumably it was there, but we don't know what happened. Maybe the kings, they cleared the forests of them, but they're not seen nowadays. So it means an extremely fierce creature. So in relation to Vishnu, why Vishnu is given this name, it means that he's the destroyer. That's also one of the functions within this universe, is to destroy. And then there's another completely different meaning, which I'll get to afterwards. So the destroyer, that's fairly straightforward. He destroys the universe. He destroys the impediments on the path of devotion for those who desire to attain his lotus feet, bhakti vigna vinashana. He's the destroyer of the impediments on the path of devotion. Then another meaning is completely different. It means analyzing the Sanskrit in different ways. So Shara means body. That's an unusual but applicable interpretation. And then Siriyam Arnat Sharaha means that which is perishable. So it's understood to mean the body. And Bha means to shine. So he who shines within the body, and there are shastric evidences given for that. The life of the body. As soon as the Atma leaves the body, then the body's luster departs. So the Atma and the Paramatma, they reside together within the body. But when they depart, all the brightness goes from the body. So it's all the same chemicals. What's the difference? The difference is the life has left, the light, the luster that comes with the Atma that has left. So he's the light within the body. And another meaning is, Shara means arrow. This body should be aimed at Bhagavan, not in the sense of hurting him, but in the sense of reaching him. Baladev Vidyabhushan, in his commentary, says that Vishnu is like a ferocious Sharabha who kills demons. The next name is Bhima. It's a well-known name, but we generally think of one of the Pandavas as Bhima, but it's also a name for Vishnu. Both Bhima and Bhishma also, they have the same meaning, which means terrible. Something fearsome, inspiring fear. Just like we have the word bhiti, means fear. So who inspires fear is Bhima. So that's one name for Krishna also, that he inspires fear. There are verses in the Upanishads, in the Bhagavatam also, that only out of fear of him does the fire burn. Out of fear of him the wind blows. Out of fear of him the planets move in their orbit. So that's one level of God realization, that doing what we're supposed to do out of fear of punishment. So he also inspires fear. He inspires fear in the hearts of those who didn't know fear. They were proud that they feared no one. Kamsa feared no one. But then Krishna came and he feared Krishna. Hiranyakashipu feared no one. And when Nrisimha appeared in front of him, for the first time in his life, he experienced what is fear. The same emotion that he had taken great pleasure in inspiring in others, now he himself felt fear. So Krishna is very fearsome, terrible to the demons. To the devotees, he's very sweet. The same Nrisimha, who was so fearsome to Hiranyakashipu, to Prahlad, oh, how very nice. My Lord has come. Bhima also, that fits with the name Sharabha. Something very terrible who destroys. And another meaning can be given by dividing the Sanskrit in a different way. Sharabho Bhima. So that can be taken to mean that he is Abhima, not fearsome. So he is not fearsome. That he's not only not fearsome, but he's a shelter. He's one who is not fearful. Well, one can be not fearful for different reasons. One reason is because just insignificant. Just like Hiranyakashipu, he wasn't afraid of anyone. He thought Indra just insignificant. But not fearful also in the sense that we can go to them for shelter. They will not only did they not inspire fear in us, but they such a person will also protect us from any fear. The next name is Samayagya. So Sama means same. Sameness, Samatvam Yoga Uchyate, equilibrium is called yoga. So sameness. And yagya is generally translated as sacrifice. So how do these two words fit together? Well, he is worshipped by Samatvam, by equilibrium, one who is detached from this world can worship Krishna. One who is attached to this world, attached to the objects of this world, and repulsed by them. These two go together. Ichha dvesha. As long as we're attached to or repulsed by some objects of this world, then we can't properly worship Krishna. Someone who is detached from this world can worship Krishna. So in that sense, his Samayagya. Then, can also mean, Yagya means Vishnu, and he himself is open to be worshipped by all. He favors no one. Samoham sarva bhuteshu. He's open to all. So in that sense, also, Samayagya. He establishes the rules of yagya. When the fire burns, the flame goes upwards. The sun moves on a certain path. The moon moves on a certain path. Shankaracharya says that this means he knows the methods and timing of the acts of creation, maintenance and destruction. He himself who has accepted the sacrifice, he who himself performs the religious duty of treating all as equal, or all in an equal manner. Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho stina priyaha. So by these different names we can, through the inspired intelligence of the acharyas, we can understand or become aware of different facets of the personality who is the supreme personality of Godhead. And now the Parashara Bhatta gives the understanding. He is well aware of the proper time when he should reveal himself to the devotees, when he should interact with the devotees in various ways. I don't. The derivation of this from the Sanskrit is not given, but it's. Then following a sub-commentator says, to give an example of this, he knew exactly when to appear in the pillar as Nrsimha. He tolerated and tolerated and tolerated the dastardly deeds of Hiranyakashipu. And just when the time was right, when the pus of the boil of his offenses against Prahlad and everyone else in the universe was just ripe, then Nrsimha appeared to lance and destroy him. Baladev Vidyabhushan, gives the understanding of this name, that he himself, being aware of his servants' devotion, he gives them the results of their efforts at the appropriate time. So we shouldn't be impatient. We should know that if we serve Krishna, in due course of time, he is not ungrateful. In due course of time, he will, if we actually desire that, if we actually desire to serve at his lotus feet, then he will give us that opportunity just at the time which he sees to be correct. The next name. Yeah, the different commentators have taken this to mean that he's an expert judge of time, place, and circumstance. Next name is Javier Harihi. Havi means the offering in the fire. And Hari means one who takes away. So he who accepts the offerings within the fire, or in a broader sense, who accepts the offerings of his devotees. He's pleased to accept what the devotees offer to him. Apart from the offering of ghee in the fire, there are different kinds of yajna that's described in Bhagavad Gita, whether by work, unattached work, by knowledge, there are various ways one can perform sacrifices. And Krishna, as Yajneshwar, he accepts all the offerings of the devotees. So when we offer in the fire, when we offer our life in the service of Krishna, we should know that he's prepared to accept, to personally accept that. It's understood that when the offering is made in the fire that's carried by Agni to Vishnu, who personally accepts that. See, he's the ultimate enjoyer of all sacrifices. When we perform devotional service, that is offered for the pleasure of Krishna. We should always remember this is done for the pleasure of Krishna. And he will accept our service. Just as in performing a yajna, everything has to be pure from the ritual point of view. The ghee has to be unadulterated. The time, place has to be computed astronomically. What is the place should be according to Shastra, some auspicious place, some holy place, or so, on a bend in a river, or so. There's so many characteristics of a suitable place for a yajna. The ingredients have to be purely obtained. That means the offerings of grains and ghee have to be given by people who have produced them or secured them without cheating or without mistreating animals. Everything has to be pure. So in the same way, if we offer everything with purity, all our activities with purity to Krishna, purity of intention, then Krishna will be very pleased to accept that. That's also possible that these two names can be interpreted as one, in which case one name Havi, he is the offering, that in Bhagavad Gita, Aham Agnir Aham Hutam, in regard to the sacrifice, Krishna says, I am the fire, I am that which is offered in the fire. So, Brahmarpanam Brahma Havihi, that it's that which is offered, it's all spiritual. So it's all Krishna. And Hari, of course, that name is well known, and that name he takes away. So that comes up elsewhere here in Vishnu Sahasranama. And is, of course, one of the most very well known names of the Supreme Lord, Harihi. So I won't go into that in more detail here. Now the next name is Sarva Lakshana Lakshanyaha, which means that Lakshana means characteristic, and Lakshanya means the means to recognize a characteristic, or that is characterizable, if there's any such word. And sarva means all. So this means that everything about him speaks of or proves that he is who he is, which is true of everyone. One, a person or anything is known by its characteristics. This is known as a microphone because it has all the characteristics of a microphone. When we say microphone, even if there's no microphone in front of us, within our mind's eye, we conjure up an image of something looking like this and functioning like this. Everything is known by its characteristics. So Krishna is known as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by all his characteristics. Everything about him is proof that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's nothing ordinary or mundane about him. Of course, we could say that about a pure devotee also. But that he is the object of devotion for all pure devotees, that he exceeds everyone in all respects, except in one respect, that sometimes he makes his devotees greater than him, or appear to be greater than him, which is another of his characteristics by which he is to be known as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So by studying, meditating upon all the qualities of Krishna, we'll find out that in all respects, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's no weakness, there's no Achilles heel, or Duryodhana's girdle. there's no weakness, there's no crack in his personality. There's nothing about him by which we can, there's no fault in him. In all respects, in whichever way we examine, if we are actually unbiased, open-minded, Chaitanya Daya Kota Koroho Bichar Korele Chitte Pabe Chomatka. The author of Chaitanya Charitamrita says that you just see what are the characteristics of the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just you make an examination. See what you will find. What will you find? You'll become astonished. So if we are actually open, if we're just neutral, we don't have to be, even if we have no predisposition toward Vishnu, if we're just open-minded and we're not envious, then we'll have to come to the conclusion that there is no one greater to, no one equal to Krishna in everything about him. The marks on his feet prove him to be the Supreme Lord. The time that he was born, if it's astrologically calculated, we'll find who is born at this Jayanti, this time when all the stars, only the Supreme Lord can appear at such a time, the astrological configuration, only suitable for him. His bodily features, his activities, his associates. What person has got so many devotees, and what quality of devotees? what personalities. They're all centered on Him. So everything about Him speaks of His being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there. Hare Krishna. There's a lot more to be said about this name, but we can get back to it later.